Blog Talk Radio.
Carrier asks, what does comfort mean to you? Is it a cool breeze on a scorching day? Or a cozy corner on a cold night? That every room of the house is as inviting as the next? And the air is fresh and clean for everyone? That humidity is where it belongs? At Carrier, comfort means more than just the temperature. And the people who invented modern air conditioning keep inventing new ways to make you comfortable, however you define it.
Earl Simmons, better known by his stage name DMX, was an American rapper, songwriter, and actor. He started rapping in the early 1990s and released his debut album, It's Dark and Hell is Hot, in 1998, selling 251,000 copies within its first week of release. DMX released 8 studio albums, 5 compilation albums, 1 mixtape, 2 extended plays, 46 singles, including 17 as a featured artist. The Grammy-nominated star's music inspired countless fans across the world, and his iconic legacy will live on forever, his family said in an emotional tribute. DMX died at the age of 50 on April 9, 2021, after suffering a heart attack a week prior. Fans alarmed as Black Rob pays tribute to DMX from hospital bed. The former Bad Boy rapper appeared to be ill in a video posted online by DJ Self of 105.1. Although it was hard to hear Black Rob in his weakened state, the rapper extended his condolences to DMX and his family after his passing on Friday. Rob said, "I feel everything about X. X was positive. Love to X." Black Rob is currently hospitalized with health issues. A new study shows that South African COVID-19 variant can break through Pfizer's vaccine. The coronavirus variant discovered in South Africa can break through Pfizer BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine to some extent. A real-world data study in Israel found, though its prevalence in the country is low and the research has not yet been peer-reviewed. However, the study does release that almost 400 people who had tested positive for COVID-19 14 days or more after they received 1 or 2 doses of the vaccine against a number of unvaccinated patients with the disease, it matched age and gender among other characteristics. But among patients who had received 2 doses of the vaccine, the variant's prevalence rate was 8 times higher than those unvaccinated, 5.4% versus 0.7. ShopRite owner Jeff Brown forms partnerships with Philadelphia's black-owned food businesses. "We like to try new things and we like local stuff," Brown says. "We're open-minded to experimenting and seeing how we could work together," Brown said. Brown says he's also planning on hiring a coach and a mentor for the small business owners, especially from underrepresented groups who have never sold to grocery stores. Brown is a 57-year-old fourth-generation grocer, widely known for opening supermarkets specifically in food deserts. He also has been testing the waters about a run for mayor in 2023. Everybody's asking and everybody's talking about the child tax credit. Well, if you have dependent children, the revised child tax credit for $3,000 for some, all the way up to $3,600 for others. This may send you and your family money through the end of 2021 and into 2022. However, the IRS is still working out the timeline for the child tax credit payments. The temporary child tax credit payments are one piece of Washington's effort to help families and individuals make it through the ongoing pandemic with the third round of stimulus checks, monthly unemployment money, and health care and insurance savings, all a part of the March law. CTC payments should start arriving in July, but a specific date has not yet been released. One inmate has died at Phoenix Correctional Facility in Pennsylvania after receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. Many others are severely ill and have experienced adverse reactions to the vaccine, but these things are going undisclosed. Worldwide coronavirus infections as of 8:35 this evening, 136,613,721 worldwide coronavirus infections and 2,948,824 coronavirus deaths worldwide. The United States of America is still the epicenter for this coronavirus pandemic with 31,918,362 coronavirus infections and 575,821 coronavirus deaths, makes the United States of America the epicenter with the most infections as well as the most coronavirus deaths worldwide out of all 219 infected countries. India is second, Brazil is third, France is fourth, Russia is fifth, United Kingdom is sixth, Turkey is seventh, Italy is number eight, Spain is number nine, and Germany is number 10. In the United States of America, California remains the epicenter for now with 3,700,545 infections and 60,436 coronavirus deaths. Texas is second, then it's Florida, New York, Illinois, Pennsylvania is now number six, Georgia is seven, Ohio is eight, New Jersey is number nine, and North Carolina is 10. Those are the top 10 states in the United States of America with the most coronavirus infections. In the state of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia is still the epicenter with 135,632 infections and 3,338 coronavirus deaths. The state of Pennsylvania has 1,077,271 infections and 25,517 coronavirus deaths. Allegheny County is second in Pennsylvania, then it's Montgomery County, Bucks, Lancaster, Delaware County, Berks, York, Chester, Lehigh, and Northampton counties make up the top 10 counties that are infected in the state of Pennsylvania. Actually, those are the top 10 counties with the most infections. All 67 counties are infected. And now to your scheduled live broadcast of News Forum with host Chinchilla Gemnesia. Hey everybody, this is Chinchilla Gemnesia, aka Chinchilla J, and welcome to another segment of News Forum. Tonight on News Forum, cries of innocence from behind prison walls, framed, blamed, and convicted, featuring the story of 30-year-old Melvin Ortiz, who was arrested at the age of 17 for a murder that took place while he was at a birthday party with 19 witnesses who can attest to his whereabouts at the time of the murder. Also, hear the story of 56-year-old disabled veteran who was tried and convicted in 2018 for a murder that took place in 1993. My special guest tonight will be Melvin Ortiz's fiance Victoria and Eric Hayes's sister Monique. Sit back, relax, enjoy the show. If at any time you would like to comment or ask questions, you may do so by pressing 1. Those of you that are tuned in to the World Wide Web tonight, if you would like to talk or comment live on the air, just dial 516-453-9133. News Forum is a syndicated radio program with over 6 million listeners, brought to you by the O&E Network and Looking Glass Entertainment.
Wild, wild, honey. Yeah. Shout out to that.
And now, the host of News Forum, Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J.
Live on air.
All right, everybody. Say hey, this is your girl, Chinchilla J, and welcome to another segment of News Forum. Tonight, we have a one show in store for you, and it's, you know, a pretty sad show because the reason I say it's sad, and it's sad to me anytime I hear of people being wrongfully incarcerated for crimes that they did not commit. That's a sad show. And, you know, but these things need to be more out in the open so people can begin to realize how bad it is in America. We have so many wrongfully incarcerated men and women throughout this country. It's just like mind-boggling, and it's just really unfathomable that there's so many. And a lot of them we don't hear about, but now we're hearing more and more each day about new cases of men and women crying from behind prison walls that they are innocent, and evidence that they have to prove their innocence, but still taking so long for cases to be reviewed, for cases to be retried and looked at over again. But the more and more we make some noise, the more people will know what's happening, and the more these states and counties and different municipalities will begin to look at these cases of cries of innocence from behind prison walls. Tonight, we're talking about being blamed, framed. Let me start that over again. We're talking about being framed, blamed, and convicted of crimes. And this is really sad. We have a young man that was arrested at the age of 17 for a crime that happened. At 19, he was sentenced to life without parole. And this is just so sad. And he is 40 years old, and I made a mistake and said 30, but he's 40 years old because he was arrested at 17. And, you know, this is just so ridiculous. 23 years later, he is still prison. And this is absolutely sad. He was convicted of murder. And at the time, which is really just blowing my mind, he has an alibi, okay? Not just one alibi, but 19 witnesses that can attest to his innocence that he was at a birthday party for a two-year-old. So he could not have committed that crime. And when you hear in detail about all of the things that have gone on in this man's case, a lot of corruption and everything else, it's just so very sad. Then we also have a 56-year-old disabled vet who is also convicted, and he's in prison right now for murder that he says that he did not commit. Now, listen, the murder took place in 1993. This man was not even notified or anything about any murder until 2018. And now he's been tried and convicted, and he's behind bars crying that he is innocent. So tonight, my special guest will be Monique Hayes, who is the sister of Eric Sr., and also Victoria Blanco, who is the fiance of Melvin Ortiz. These two women tonight will tell the stories about the men they love tonight. First, I'm going to bring on my guest, Monique Hayes, who is the sister of Eric Hayes Sr., so she can talk more about her brother's case. So let's welcome tonight to News Forum, Monique Hayes. Monique, how are you tonight? Welcome to News Forum.
Thank you, Chinchilla. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here and to be the voice for my brother. I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for asking. I hope everything with you as well.
Yes, yes. All right. So, Monique, I know it's been a few months, so I'm going to get you on a show, and I have you on now. And I just want you to let everybody know a little bit about your brother and the reasons why he could not have committed this crime.
Okay, go ahead, Lee. Absolutely. My name is Monique Hayes. My brother's name is Eric Lee Hayes, Sr. My brother Eric is, he was in the military. He was in the Army. He got out of the military in the mid to late 80s, and he moved to Arizona from our hometown, Toledo, Ohio. And this incident that happened, it happened in November of 2019. As Chinchilla mentioned, Eric wasn't notified till 2018 of what he was accused for, this murder. So supposedly the murder happened November 1993. There was a gentleman who went to a home. It was basically a drug case that went bad. He went to go sell drugs at this home and was robbed and murdered. Now, from 1993 until 2015, this case sat cold. You know, nothing, no leads, no anything. In between that time, my brother had minor brushes, you know, with the law, so there was plenty of time for them to have access to his DNA. Nobody ever said anything, never approached him about his case, about this case. So in 2015, a detective, let me get the detective's name. I want to make sure I have this correct.
Okay. So he was not notified or anything.
Wasn't contacted or anything. Never was mentioned about being a suspect. So November of 2015, they had a stocking cap. It was a white nylon stocking cap. And a long sleeve red shirt that supposedly one of the three suspects that was involved in this murder had worn. So they found the white stocking cap. They said it was two different people's DNA on the stocking cap. And it was one nanogram of DNA is what they measured, what they did a DNA test off of. They sent the DNA, they sent the stocking cap to be tested in 2015. They didn't get the results back to September 2017 is when the results came back. My brother wasn't contacted until April of 2018. So I have a lot of questions of who handled this, these articles. Where did they, why did it take so long? You know, why him? And it was so long ago, we tried to reach out to employers that he had at that time to see if he could have possibly been at work. Because, no, I mean, 1993 and 2018, if that date has no significance, I mean, who knows where he was at or what he was doing. He was like, you know, I could have been at work. He was involved in a drunk driving accident, so that affected his memory. And we reached out to employers. We tried to reach out to as many friends as possible, and everybody's like, you know, this time is just too far out. It's been too much time has passed. And there's been so many discrepancies in the case. We're like, okay, do you have any DNA evidence of my brother? Do you have Eric's DNA at the crime scene? Is there any fingerprints? Nobody can put him there. The witnesses gave several descriptions, none of which match my brother. And we presented this information. He's had attorneys. He had a court-appointed attorney we were talking to the attorney, and it was just like they had already assumed he was guilty, and nothing we were saying or any evidence we were mentioning or questioning, they wasn't even willing to listen to it or even willing to look at it. And when we asked questions like, well, what happened to the murder weapon? They don't even have a murder weapon. So where's the murder weapon? And based on the notes from the detective who had did the interview with the family of the person who was murdered, the gentleman who was murdered, he went there with the intent to sell drugs, and it was just basically a robbery gone bad. I said, okay, well, what happened to the drugs? What happened? You know, there's a lot of questions. And they charged my brother with first-degree murder, kidnapping, attempted to commit armed robbery. And I'm like, wait a minute. How are you getting all these charges on him and you can't even put him there? And what happened to the other suspects? You said it was three people. And then there's discrepancy on where the altercation took place, where exactly in the home or outside this murder happened. It was just, the story is all over the place. And at first I was trying to follow it, and it became overwhelming, so I had to step back. Then I went back to it and picked up and started reading the notes. And for every question or every fact that you point out, you can't get nobody to respond or even want to listen or look over it. We did reach out to the Innocence Project, but if you're eligible for an attorney, then they're not able to assist you.
Oh, wow. So you said you reached out to the Innocence Project, and if you're eligible for an attorney, they won't assist you?
No. No.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And now you're in Arizona, correct, Monique?
That's correct. Yes, I am in Arizona.
Okay. And the murder that took place in Arizona as well?
Place in Phoenix, Arizona, November 9th, 1993.
Okay. All right. Now, the interesting thing, you know, I find really disturbing is with the DNA. With the cap, the stocking cap, and when I read through some of your the documents you sent to me, they also mentioned something about a sweater, a red sweater or something. Now, these items, you know, I just can't get it in my head why those items would have been left behind at a murder scene. I mean, who takes off the stocking cap and leaves it there at a crime scene? Who takes off the sweater and leave it there at the crime scene? I mean, that's just really crazy to me. You know, people just don't do that. If they're murdering somebody, they're not going to take off stuff and leave it behind as evidence should be found. So those things there are questionable, as well as the amount of time from 1993 up until 2018. I mean, all of those years have gone by, and your brother was just notified in 2018. And, you know, that is just so very sad, because that's a lot of years. And like you said, people, you know, don't remember. Some places of employment have even gone out of business from 1993. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. So there sounds like there are lots of loopholes in that case. And I'm going to definitely reach out to some people that I know to see, you know, if I can pass over the information on to some of the people I know to see if they will look into the case for you, because there's a lot of questions, like you said, that definitely have gone unanswered. And a lot of red flags there from what I'm hearing from you and what I read in all of the statements, and especially, you know, that he's also disabled, you know. And so there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, Monique, and I am definitely going to pass your information on and put you in touch with some people that can possibly help you. And the Innocence Project, I'm really surprised that the one there did not try to help you and turned you away, because, you know, you could get a lawyer. But, you know, that's ridiculous. So I'm definitely going to have some people look into that for you. And I thank you so much for coming on and being a guest. And I am definitely going to be in touch with you again and have you back on to share even more with us about your brother. And, you know, if you talk, when you talk to him again, please, you know, let him know if there's anything that he would like, you know, to be said on air, you know, and that you can speak to him as, you know, is his words. Ask him to put it in writing or tell you it on the phone, and you can record it, and we can play that live on the air for everyone to hear. And, again, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing Eric Hayes Sr.'s story. And my heart goes out to you and to your brother. And God bless him. He is a disabled vet that served this country, and now this country has terribly wronged him. My heart goes out to you, Monique. Did you have something else to say?
Yes, you're welcome. And that's another thing. We kept telling him, like, you know, he's a disabled veteran. He suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, it was several things we're trying to get them to take a look at and take into consideration and reach out to the VA on all the documentation. They didn't even acknowledge the fact that he's a veteran.
Wow.
Nothing. There
wow.
is issues on where these articles were found. The address didn't match in several of the detectives' reports. It's a lot. But I do appreciate you giving me the chance to share my brother's case and talk about what's going on and what's affecting so many Americans, as you mentioned before, so many people that's wrongfully convicted and incarcerated.
Yes, it's a sad thing. And thank you again for coming on. And I will definitely keep you and your brother in my prayers. And I'm sure those that are listening will do so as well. And Monique, let everybody know where they can sign Eric's petition.
There's a website. It's justiceforinjustice.org. And it has Eric Lee Hayes Sr. It has a picture of Eric, and it also has information pertaining to his case.
Okay, great. All right, so if you can just, you know, inbox me all that stuff, and I'll definitely post all that up on my page. And again, thank you so much, Monique, for coming on. You're welcome.
Thank you for having
me.
Wow. You're welcome.
Oh, you're quite welcome. All right, everybody, that was Monique Hayes, the sister of Eric Hayes Sr. Oh, boy, this is, you know, another case that, you know, so many loopholes and red flags, and it is just so, so sad. Those of you that are listening tonight via the World Wide Web, if you would like to talk or comment, you need to call us at 516-453-9133. Those of you that are on the line listening to News Forum tonight, and if you would like to talk, comment, make a suggestion or a question or vent, you can just press 1 and you will be placed in the caller queue tonight. All right, we're going to go on now to our next guest, who is Victoria Blanco. She is the fiancée of Melvin Ortiz, and Melvin's case is one that, oh, my gosh, about this and heard about this. It is just so much stuff going on in this case, from corruption, framing, planting of evidence, all types of things, lying, just outright lies and fabrication. I mean, this case is like from A to Z. You can name everything that's wrong with this case. Melvin was 17 years old and really sad, especially when you hear about this case and how someone that's in a position of authority and prestige and, you know, well-known political figures and things like that, how they often have hands in murder cases and other cases, and they hide evidence, especially if that evidence is pointing towards their own child or anyone else in their family. They will try to frame whoever they can. And this is the case of Melvin Ortiz. So I'm not going to talk anymore about it. I am going to let Victoria come on right now and talk about Melvin's case. Victoria, how are you this evening? Welcome to News Forum.
Hi, Chinchilla. Thank you. Yes, my name is Victoria. I'm the fiance of Melvin Ortiz. Thank you for having me on. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Okay, wonderful. So I guess I'll just dive in. So, yes, Melvin Ortiz, this case based out of Reading, Pennsylvania. It truly is a tragedy. Melvin has spent more years inside prison than he has outside prison for his, you know, of his entire lifespan. He was taken in at just turned 18 years old, and he's still there today. He's 40 years old. With this case, though, it's a little bit more tragic than your typical wrongful convictions. Typically, wrongful convictions consist of mistaken identity or, you know, mistaken DNA samples, as we just heard in the last case. But with Melvin's wrongful conviction, there is no DNA, no physical evidence that ties him to the crime. There is no what we believe a true eyewitness, a credible eyewitness that ties him to the crime. His conviction is based purely on mindful, conscious, purposeful misconduct at the hands of the prosecuting district attorney and at the hands of the local politician that governed over that area. So you have to put yourself back in time, Reading, Pennsylvania, 1997. It was a predominantly white area. In the city, the small city of Reading, Pennsylvania, Latinos had started moving there from New York and other countries, and it was very clear that they were not welcome. Myself, being from that area, I personally experienced racism, as so did my family. In the case that Melvin was convicted of, it was a botched robbery. Two men entered a pizza villa and attempted to rob the pizza villa. And while attempting to make the robbery, the owner of the pizza villa, trying to get money out of the register, was shot and killed by one of the two perpetrators. So this happened around 7:30 at night. And Melvin was actually at a birthday party from about 6 to 9 o'clock that same evening. We know this because there was about 19 people that can attest to him being at this birthday party. And then there is also eyewitnesses who saw two men going into the pizza shop and also a man inside who saw the crime, see the incident occurring at the same time. So going back to Melvin's alibi, he was at a birthday party of a good friend, and there were several people there that he opened the door for them to come in, or they sat down and spoke, or they were standing outside and talking outside. And during Melvin's trial, the judge and the prosecutor would only let four people from that party testify. And they truly manipulated the jury because they chose the four people that Melvin was closest to, right? Not everyone at that party he was well acquainted with. So not everyone at that party would have a reason to lie. And the prosecution positioned his alibi witnesses as leaving room for the jury to question if they would be lying for Melvin, saying Melvin was at this party when maybe he wasn't, but in fact he was. The judge, again, only let four out of 19 persons testify to Melvin's whereabouts. So Melvin was at this party about 20 minutes away from the crime scene. He did not own a vehicle. He did not have access to a vehicle. So it's highly, I guess you could say it's mathematically, he could not have committed this crime. So that's one part of his conviction was that's troubling, is that he did have an alibi, but the judge did not let his alibi witnesses testify. Melvin was convicted, and this is also in conclusion with what the local judge states. Melvin was convicted based on three witnesses. Now, these are not eyewitnesses. These are just witnesses whom we know two of them have committed perjury because they have since come forward and admitted they committed perjury and have basically stated that their testimony was false. The third, we know that testimony is false as well, but he has not come forward to recant his testimony. So I guess I'll go over the three witnesses. The first witness is Calixto Melendez, and he has been arrested and indicted, convicted on more than 30 different crimes stemming back from 1985 with the Reading, Pennsylvania Police Department up until current day. He is currently in Blair County Prison in Pennsylvania. Lifelong drug addict and lifelong criminal. He was, before Melvin's trial, he was also cited for testifying about other crimes and then coming back later and saying that basically he lied in exchange, you know, for a lightened sentence or some other type of reward that he would receive in exchange for his testimony. So he had told the jurors that Melvin had told him while they were in jail together that Melvin committed the crime. His testimony is not very credible. He even wrote a letter to the district attorney confirming that he was coerced to testify against Melvin and really did not want to come back down to the trial to testify against Melvin. He actually sent that letter to the DA. However, when it was time for the trial, I guess the DA coerced him to come in and lie on the stand. So that's
wow.
That's the first out of three witnesses.
Okay. Now, is that the Calixto Melendez?
Mm-hmm. Calixto Melendez, yes. Jailhouse snitch.
Okay.
And I think we know the Innocence Project teaches us that jailhouse snitch testimony is not reliable.
Right. Yeah. Now I want to talk about more now because we know he had 19 witnesses to vouch for him as to his whereabouts. And now we have this jailhouse snitch that is not credible at all, so his testimony should have been thrown out. Now we also have, I want you to talk briefly about Thomas, okay, Thomas Caltagirone, okay? You could talk about him because he was a Pennsylvania state rep. Was he a state rep or a judge, a judiciary committee? I know he's been a state rep for a long time, like 22 terms in Pennsylvania. And so that's over 43 years that this man has been in office, and he's totally corrupt. So talk about him, his son, because his son is, who the evidence really points to. He was the one that had the gun and all of this stuff, and now that gun is missing. And, you know, so can you talk about this for me, Victoria, because people need to understand this and how, people in prestigious positions such as politicians, how they get away with murder, okay? So please talk about this for me.
Sure. So let's I guess keep it relevant to Melvin's case, but I will get into how Thomas Caltagirone completely manipulated his son. So the other two persons that claim Melvin told them that Melvin committed the crime was John Caltagirone. John Caltagirone is the son of the longest standing Pennsylvania House member, Thomas Caltagirone. So again, John Caltagirone is Thomas Caltagirone's son. Thomas Caltagirone was also the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. That means Thomas Calcedrone oversaw the budget for the judicial system, what judges got hired, what judges got promoted, and what judges got paid. John Calcedrone, Thomas's son, came forward to police and said that Melvin told him he committed the crime, that Melvin confessed this to him. Again, so Melvin knew John through John's sister also lived next door to Melvin and his family. So it was kind of like, you know, they're neighbors, they see each other, they run into each other. I think Melvin's older brother was closer to John's age, so they you know, may have been more of acquaintances than Melvin and John. But that's how, you know, that's how they knew each other. John's girlfriend, who was 15 and pregnant with his child at the time, first off, he was never charged for statutory rape, which was odd. But she also had claimed that Melvin told her he committed the crime. Since then, the girlfriend has come forward and formally recanted her testimony and admits to being coerced by the district attorney, Mark C. Baldwin, and also coerced by her then-boyfriend, John Calcedrone, to lie and say that Melvin confessed and told her he committed the murder as well. And her testimony was deemed credible by the current judge. So going back to John Calcedrone, he had a history of dealings with the police back, I'd say, at least 5-6 years before he even knew Melvin. There's different, and I have copies of all the criminal reports, but there's harassment, local police officers telling young girls to get protective orders against him, robbery, theft, assault, illegal firearms, battery, tons of criminal cases that he was involved in. And in some of these cases, he even calls the police on himself to report the crime. And then the police, when the police find out that he was involved in the crime, he then not only becomes a witness, but a suspect. So a lot of these crimes are very convoluted in the report. But I think what's important to understand is that he was arrested and questioned several times for these various crimes, but never indicted and never convicted. They were always thrown out.
Wow.
So if we go to the time of the murder, a couple of days after John says Melvin committed this crime, police reports show Thomas Calcedrone calling into the Reading Police Department stating that he has a gun, an illegal firearm, and it happens to be a gun that can, what I believe, and we'd have to look at ballistic reports to confirm this, but I believe it's the firearm that was used in the pizza shop murder. And the district attorney speaks with Thomas Calcedrone, talks about where the firearm came from, what type of firearm it is, and that his son had it. So that's a federal offense when you have illegal firearms. And no charges were ever brought up. It was never questioned. No connection was made between that firearm and the crime that, you know, Melvin was convicted of, but yet here they are with a firearm that could have potentially been the firearm used in that robbery.
Okay, so that firearm was never, like, tested for any type of thing. It never went through ballistics or anything like that, huh?
No, never.
Wow.
Not that we're aware of, unless maybe there's sealed dockets out there or something. We don't really know whatever happened with that firearm.
Wow, this is ridiculous. This is so sickening. Victoria, stay right there and keep your thoughts in mind. We're going to take a caller right now because we have a lot of callers waiting to comment. All right, so we're going to take a caller right now. And, again, if you want to call a comment tonight, we need to press 1. All right, caller, you're live on the air with Nudes Forum. How are you tonight?
Hello, how are you tonight? I am Angela calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I want to congratulate Nudes Forum anchor Chinchilla Janicia on your O&E syndicated station all-time connection record with your 18th all-time and third consecutive. Congratulations, Chinchilla.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Angela. Thank you so much. All right. That's some good news. Good news. Good news. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and continue with the show. And Victoria, go ahead and continue.
Sure. So when Melvin was first tried, his attorneys had asked for change of due to the fact that the main witness was the son of the man who actually controlled which judges made the most money. Melvin's attorney asked for a change of venue, meaning can we have the trial in a neighboring county or somewhere else? That was denied by the judge. Melvin's attorneys asked for change of veneer, which means bring in juror members from outside of the county to be able to hear this case. Because also at the time, the local newspaper, which was privately owned and also controlled by the district attorney, was publishing horrible, very biased, I guess you would say, very biased news articles about Melvin and putting his face all over the paper, young man picked up, charged with murder, teenage girl comes forward with testimony, and he really didn't have a fair chance to have a fair trial from the beginning at all. But, of course, all the motions were denied. I think some of the attorneys had to recuse themselves. Some of them stepped down because none of them really wanted to get involved, because they knew they were going to send an innocent kid, he was basically a child, to prison for a crime that he could not commit.
Wow.
I guess getting back to the case, though, you have these three people that are saying he did it. You have four people who are friends, put yourself in the jury's shoes, saying that he was at a party. And, again, not all the alibi witnesses were allowed to testify. So...
Right.
Victoria,
let me stop you right there for 1 second. So now, out of the 19 witnesses, you said four were allowed to testify, and those were of Melvin's friends. So it's like the prosecution, then they wanted to put them on the stand because they were Melvin's friends that they can paint the picture of, okay, they're probably lying for him. So the other 15 people were not allowed to testify, ones that were not like really good friends with Melvin or, barely knew him, but they knew he was there that night because they saw him. So, yeah, I just want to put that out there so people can really understand this. That's just so very wrong. Okay, go ahead, Victoria.
So there was an eyewitness, a man inside the pizza shop when it got robbed, and he saw everything that happened. He was probably about 4 or 5 feet away from the two men that came in and the owner when this happened. He describes two men basically coming in. He describes what they're wearing. One is wearing black pants and a dark purple sweatshirt. The other is wearing white pants and a dark sweatshirt. He states when he finds out that Melvin was the one that they were looking for, he told the district attorney and detective, district attorney Mark C. Baldwin and Detective Grawl, several times that Melvin was not one of these two gentlemen, one of these two persons that came in to rob this place. He also testified at trial. but again, it wasn't enough to. It wasn't enough for the jury. So there's that aspect of it. Also, what came out in trial, going back to the politician's son, John Calcedrone. John Calcedrone had told a couple different people that he really was interested in the $10,000 reward for that was being offered for this crime. Meaning, if you turned somebody in and they were convicted, you got $10,000. And that came out in the trial transcripts as well. There's just a lot in this case that doesn't add up. Again, Melvin was nowhere near the scene when the crime occurred. The district attorney prosecuted this himself, again, Mark C. Baldwin. And he basically tried to also manipulate how the jury was seeing Melvin by stating that the eyewitness who was saying the person had white pants, well, he would say, well, maybe it was light pants they were wearing. And Melvin and his family and friends provided pictures to the district attorney of him at that birthday party. So there are pictures of Melvin at this birthday party all throughout the night. But those pictures couldn't be used at all. The jury never saw those pictures either because they weren't timed.
Wow.
So in those pictures, the district attorney saw that Melvin was wearing like brown khaki pants and a hoodie. And he tried to say, well, he did. He did in court in the trial. He said that, oh, well, Melvin was wearing that clothes. Melvin was wearing the light pants, like the assailant. So it was very, throughout the whole trial, it was just very manipulative. And we're not even sure what other type of exculpatory evidence they may be hiding.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it's much more. And, you know, khaki pants at Melvin, because I'm looking at Melvin right now at a picture of him at the party with the khaki pants on. That's nowhere near white pants. So that's just so ridiculous. And now I have a question, and then we're going to take a caller. Now, for that testified. Now, Melvin's defense attorney, now, why didn't he bring forth the other witnesses?
He tried. So Judge Schaefer, they tried, and the judge said no. The judge said no, and which it was Judge Schaefer. And as a matter of fact, a few months before this trial, John Calcedrone had stolen a motorcycle, and when the police went to arrest him for the stolen motorcycle, as you or I would be arrested if we committed auto theft. The police department was receiving a call the same night from Judge Schaefer saying that John's rights were being violated and to let him go. And you can't connect the dots. Thomas Calcedrone decides which judges, you know, get what and get paid what and what money is funneled through Harrisburg into the county. Here's the judge who really has to take direction from basically the guy that's responsible for making sure he gets a paycheck. And he calls in Judge Schaefer, Forrest Schaefer, who's deceased now. Forrest Schaefer says John's rights are being violated. And that was really the trend for John Calcedrone throughout the years with all of the criminal activity that he was involved with. He was always just, he was able to have illegal firearms, get into car accidents, assault people, battery, and just not be charged with it. That
Judge Schaefer is
the same judge that saw over Melvin's trial. So if you take yourself a few steps back, not only do you have the media corruption, the political corruption, the prosecutorial corruption, you also have the judicial corruption. And the judicial corruption doesn't stop once Melvin's convicted. It continues on, and it continues on to this day.
Wow, this is just so, so saddening, sickening, and frustrating and everything else. Oh, this is so ridiculous. We're going to go to another caller, and then we're going to come right back to you, Victoria. All right, caller, you're live on the air with News Forum. How are you tonight?
Hi, good evening, Shishon. This is Karen Johnson. How are you?
Good. How are you, Karen?
I'm good, thank you. I wanted to ask the first young lady, because he's been incarcerated, is he not able to use Innocence Project now? Because he's been incarcerated, so of course he has no income. And also, I know in our case in Pennsylvania, when my fiance had the initial team, they are no longer with Innocence Project, and we found out 2 years ago that they also now have a whole new staff and a forensic lawyer on staff now. So we've been trying to write her, but I wanted to ask her, you know, would he be eligible now because he's been incarcerated for so long and doesn't have the income for an attorney, if that's something you can look to. And my second question to Victoria, hi, Victoria, we're Facebook friends, but I'll talk to you later. But we're experiencing the same thing with this one particular judge that sees over everything in Brian's case. And I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they get away with it when, you know, anytime there's a petition, there's a particular judge, and there has to be a way that we can stop that. So I'll talk to you later, Victoria, but I just wanted to tell that young lady to try the Innocence Project again, because maybe so much time has passed that, you know, there may be a whole new team there and he may be eligible now because of no income. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in, Karen. And Monique, I'm not sure if Monique is still on the line or not, if she's still in the queue.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well,
yes.
Did you hear the question that Karen posed to you?
Yes. Hi, Karen. This was recent. We reached out to the Innocence Project, but because he had a court-appointed attorney and he is going through that court-appointed attorney to do the appeal process, he still has that representation, I guess, through the court-appointed attorney, so he still has access to representation, so that still disqualifies him.
Oh, wow.
Of any assistance through the Innocence Project.
Okay. Wow. That's something. Okay. Well, keep searching out there, Monique. You may be able to find a pro bono lawyer that will look at his case. And like I said, I'm going to look into it and see what I can do from my end. And you're in Arizona, so I will definitely see what I can do. All right, so just stay on the line. And again, Karen, thank you so much for calling in with your comments and with your questions. All right, Victoria, back to you with Melvin's case. Now, you know, Melvin's case, this is just so very disturbing because there's so much corruption there from everywhere. It's just really just outrageous. And I really can't understand why he has not been given a new trial, why they're not looking at his case. But then, yes, I can, because they're still trying to cover up all of this corruption, and they're still trying to cover up the real murder, okay, the real murderer. And this is just so ridiculous, and something has to be done. So those of you that are listening tonight, you definitely need to, you know, if you're in Reading, Pennsylvania, you need to start writing to your congressmen there in Reading, write to all of the legislators there, the senators, state reps, and everybody else, and, you know, for them to do something, because this needs to be looked into, all of this evidence that proves that Melvin could not have been the one that committed this murder. And no one has done anything yet in Reading, Pennsylvania, or in the state of Pennsylvania for all of that. you know, this really upsets me just to no end to see all of this and to hear all of this. Everything is there, and they're doing absolutely nothing. And this is very upsetting to me. And for Melvin to be behind bars for all of these years, 23 years, and all of this evidence that points to someone else is just a terrible thing. And Victoria, now I know that you have Mark Howard working on the case now with his students at Georgetown. And now, have they been able to make any leeway or getting anything else done or getting anybody to look at this? Can you please update me on what's going on now in Melvin's case?
Sure. So his case is actively going through the court system. We're hoping things like prosecutorial misconduct and Brady violations will be recognized by the courts. They are very blatant, very clear that there was misconduct and Brady violations. Things like John Caltagirone's lengthy criminal history was never disclosed. You know, Tina's attempts to come forward and tell the truth, they were never fully disclosed in their entirety.
Okay, now Tina
conviction. The 15, so the 15-year-old girl. Yeah.
Okay. Tina
was 15 years old at the time. John Caltagirone's girlfriend. She was pregnant with his child, underage. And again, he and the district attorney coerced her to lie and just basically repeat what John was saying in the trial. She and this was again before the conviction. So since after the conviction, Melvin did try to appeal a few times, but his appeals were always denied, and it's a little bit hard again when the star witness, his father, is part of the Judiciary Committee and also sat on the board for the Pennsylvania Commission on Delinquency, meaning additional money that Harrisburg would fund down to the counties to help fight crime. He sat on that board as well. So now not only did he have control over what money the judges got, but he also had control over what money the police force and the sheriffs received as well. So he had a lot of control. The judges were all friends. Everybody was friends. Melvin's appeals were just denied. The first denial led him to become time barred, really. So where are we at now? Yes, we are receiving help from one of the universities in Washington, D.C. They're helping us to put the case together. They've put a timeline together showing one witness at the exact same time, showing Melvin over here across town, and the other witness at the exact same time seeing two men entering the location. And again, when I'm talking about Melvin's alibi witnesses, I'm talking about acquaintances, people he'd never met before, just people that he's seen in pictures with and people that recognized his face. So they're helping us to just really do the work of what the prosecutor should have done, of what the detective should have done, of what the police should have done. They are doing the work of the Reading, Pennsylvania police and district attorney's offices. And that's all that really needs to be done with this case.
Wow.
So
this case
we have a few.
One that's crazy. You have a
yeah.
few what?
We have a... I was going to say, feel free to follow along in our journey. We do believe Melvin will be exonerated and will come home. You can Google Melvin Ortiz, MelvinOrtiz, and you'll find his petition. Or you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Free Melvin Ortiz. Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, Free Melvin Ortiz. We encourage you to follow. You'll learn about the eyewitness that says Melvin was not there. You'll learn about Thomas Calter Jerome and how he used taxpayer money to settle sexual assault lawsuits. You'll find about Tina, the teenager that was coerced to lie under oath. You'll find about the $10,000 reward that we believe John Caltagirone received for turning in his neighbor, Melvin. You'll find out about Mark C. Baldwin committing egregious prosecutorial misconduct in another case that happened around that time. You'll learn about Melvin's alibi. And you'll also learn about the victim, who we would really like to see and find out who the hell killed her husband. Because there's two victims in this case, George Clauser and Melvin Ortiz. And that's
yes.
This is just based on facts. We're just listing facts on this call. There's no opinion. It's just facts.
Yep, and the facts are definitely there, and the facts is definitely what needs to be looked at and addressed, and I do believe Melvin will be exonerated as well, and I wish you the best of luck. Victoria, I thank you so much for sharing Melvin's story tonight, and Monique, I thank you so much for sharing Eric's story tonight as well. And, you know, both of these cases need to be looked at. And these cases are two totally different cases. They both consist of murder, however, but the cases are different because one case, there's a load of evidence that shows that Melvin is innocent and someone else committed the crime. There's a lot of corruption from prosecutorial misconduct, judicial misconduct, and police corruption, and all kinds of other things in this case. Then in Eric's case, there is the 25 years that have gone by from the time that a murder was committed to the time that Eric Hayes was contacted as being a suspect in that murder. And there's the question of the skull cap or a stocking cap and a sweater being left behind at the crime scene that was not introduced into evidence until 2015. So this is just really crazy. So both of these cases need to be looked at, and I hope and pray that they are looked at and both of these men are exonerated. And, you know, my heart goes out to you, Monique. My heart goes out to you as well, Victoria, and to Melvin and to Eric. I thank both of you ladies for coming on to News Forum with Chinchilla tonight. God bless both of you and stay safe. All right. Right now we're going to go into Ngozi time, and then I will be right back with my thoughts for tonight.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the two young ladies that came on this program tonight. That's what makes News Forum so great. And this week, I'm going to my own editorial. So, of course, the views and comments of what I'm about to say are not the views and opinions of course, O&E Dynasty and Looking Glass Entertainment and our sponsors. You look at the root problem, Chinchilla, of the judicial system. We want to go back to 1857. And my editorial tonight is No Rights, Which the White Man Was Bound to Respect. We talk about the Dred Scott decision. This month, Chinchilla, marks the 150th anniversary of the Supreme Court's infamous Dred Scott versus Sanford case, in which an African-American slave sued for his freedom. Now, Dred Scott's argument, his argument was because he was brought into free territories, he could not be returned to the bonds of slavery. Over the course of 11 years, his case was litigated several times over and eventually wound up into the United States Supreme Court. So, you know, now we're in April, but on March 6, 1857, Chief Justice Roger Taney, okay, issued what is regarded as the worst Supreme Court opinion ever. He noted that the question before the court, whether an African-American is a citizen of the United States and thus able to file suit in federal court. His analysis of that issue is couched in objectively racist language. African Americans have been more than a century, this is what he said, before regarded as being of an inferior order. And this goes through all the people, no matter what minority you are. We're talking about Taney and his opinion of Native Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanics in this country during that time in 1857. Again, African Americans have been for a century been regarded as being an inferior order, and although unfit to associate themselves with the white race, either socially or politically in relations, and so far inferior that they have no rights in which the white man was bound to respect, and that they, the Africans, must justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his benefit. He was bought and sold and treated as an ordinary article of merchandise and traffic wherever and whenever a profit could be made by it. Now, this response was immediate. Rather than settle the issue of slavery, it simply inflamed public opinion and divided the country further. Nothing's really changed. You look at people being incarcerated for nothing. Chinchilla Jonesia is a champion for those rights, and she does it on a constant basis right here on this news forum. And, you know, I really thank her for bringing on these stories. But it goes back to the root of the issue. What really has happened in America? What really has happened in a situation where innocent people go to jail and corrupt officials allow it to happen and even put in motion for it to happen? We have a trial going on in Minnesota right now that is so obvious. If anybody has a health condition, so what? No one has the right to put their knee on a person's neck and kill them. We had, for the first time really since 1967, all-out riots in American cities. One city, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, was the first since those, just the craziness. They were the first city to have two major civil unrests in 1 year. News Forum is here for all of you to be able to understand that we are here to challenge the powers that be. We are here to make sure that equal rights under the law shall be established. Right, Chinchilla? We are here to make sure that
yes.
the 14th Amendment will always be pushed and for all Americans, every single American, every single citizen is declared to be free. That's my editorial for tonight. I have more editorials this week. This is my editorial week. I do it every year. And I wanted to bring up the Dred Scott decision tonight. Tomorrow night, it's funny, Chinchilla, you honored DMX. Tomorrow night, Sister Bessie will be doing songs, you know, for me on the Wheels of Steel tomorrow night. You know, Honeybee Files, you know, hosted by me, you know, dynamic DJ Honeybee Olasky. Tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern Daylight Time on these O&E stations, we honor Earl Simmons, a.k.a. DMX tomorrow night. So all are invited to join in. And, of course, Beverly Nixon has advertised the only, which is on the deli and goes enterprise, reach the course at www.lookingglassentertainment@wordpress.com as well as in Gozy Primetime one at bevnet.com. We're in Gozy Time both for Twitter and Instagram, Ola Deli and Gozy at Pinterest and Google+, Ola Deli and Malin and Gozy at Facebook as well as our business page, News Forum, as well as historic Beverly Nation Online Radio established 2013. And any comments, suggestions, or wonderful program tonight, olaydelay.ingozbamai@gmail.com. I am the International Internet Radio broadcasting nominee for the class of 2021 and your mother and father's favorite producer, Ola Dudley Malay Wengozi, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. The Dred Scott decision. Why are we on the radio right now talking about exonerations? Why are we on the radio talking about unlawful incarcerations? Her name is news anchor Chinchilla Jones here. I'm out like shout.
He said he's out like shout. Okay. I say I'm outy like out. He say I'm out like shout. Okay. All right. That was beautiful, brother. Very beautiful bringing in the 14th Amendment, talking about Dred Scott. Very beautiful, very fitting for tonight. And people that are listening tonight on the internet and via the phone, racism is still very prevalent in the United States of America. Prevalent. We look at these two states, Arizona and Pennsylvania. Both states filled with racism. Phoenix, Arizona, definitely. Arizona, wow, very racist state. The whole state of Arizona. Reading, Pennsylvania, a very racist county. It was back when Melvin was first arrested, and it is still that way now, 23 years later. Arizona was racist in 1993, and it is still racist today in 2021. We have to really try to do all we can do in this country to end racism. But in all reality, racism will always be around. So what can we do to try to prevent it from happening? Something we're going to have to really ponder upon, because people will be people. Racist people will be racist people. No matter how they try to cover it up, no matter how they try to push it under the rug or keep it in the closet, racism will always show its ugly face. And this is something that we deal with every day in the United States of America, unfortunately. And America is not the only country that experiences racism. But tonight, we're talking about America, because this is where I am. And it's unfortunate that this exists. Again, my heart goes out to Eric Hayes and to Evan Ortiz. And my prayers are with you and with Victoria and with Monique tonight. I invite you to join me next Sunday night, same time, same place, right here on Newsform at 9:30 p.m., when my special guest will be Karen Penny Johnson, who will talk about her fiancé, Brian Purnell, who is wrongfully incarcerated right now for a crime he did not commit. And this is just so sickening, and I want to expose all of the corruption that I can that's happened in this country. You can follow me on Instagram at Princess Chinchilla. Chinchilla is spelled with one L. Follow me on Facebook, Chinchilla Jonesia. And also follow Mike Test Entertainment TV. That's Mike, M-I-C, Test, T-E-S-T, Entertainment TV page on Facebook. Bringing you all kinds of stories. And also follow Pandemic 2020. If you want all of the coronavirus updates daily, follow that page, Pandemic 2020. I can be reached at 407-272-7616 if you have a story that is News Forum worthy. Give me a call. This is your girl, Chinchilla. I'm also a naturopath, so if you have any health conditions right now that's troubling you, get in touch with me. If you want to stay coronavirus-free, I'm not taking the vaccine, and I hope that none of you take it. Those of you that already did, oh well. But I've been trying to tell people not to take that vaccine. So if you want to stay coronavirus-free without taking that vaccine, you better give me a call, 407-272-7616. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in tonight. This is your girl, Chinchilla J. I'm Audi, Black Audi. Have a great week. Be blessed.